And before that, on the other side of the world, the outlook may seem none too bright. Miriam O'Reilly is on the shores of the River Murray in drought-ridden South Australia, where farmers and city dwellers are having to compete for dwindling water supplies, costing the earth.
The river is extremely and vitally important to us because it's our lifeblood. We talk about the river as we talk about our body. It's all the arteries and the veins that is in our body. And what seems to have been happening is they have been trying to manage that through constructing weirs and dams and the like. And what you are doing is actually blocking off the flow of blood through your body, and the water is becoming sick.
This is the Murray River, the main source of drinking water for the people of Australia and the heart and lungs of Australian agriculture. But this river is in danger of drying up. South Australia is running dry. It's in the grip of a drought that shows no sign of abating. The two rivers, the Murray and the Darling, that supply much of Australia's water for drinking and agriculture, are at critically low levels. This week in Costing the Earth, I'm at the southern end of the River Murray. It's predicted that the major cities, where 80% of the population live, are going to run out of water if urgent action isn't taken. The whole country is looking at farming practices along the Murray-Darling Basin. Irrigating thirsty crops like rice and cotton uses up two-thirds of the water, and people are asking, can this be justified in such desperate times? The Commonwealth Government wants to buy back water rights from farmers, and it's threatening to ban crop irrigation for a year if there's no significant rainfall over the next few weeks. The drought is beginning to pit town against country in the battle over who gets the water in the Murray-Darling Basin. David Patton, your Associate Professor of Earth and Environmental Sciences at the University of Adelaide. Why is this river in crisis? Why is it in danger of dying?
Well, the reason why it's in danger of dying is that we actually now use virtually all the water, and certainly for the last 4 or 5 years we take all of the water out of the system for human use and fail to provide any for the environment. And these systems actually require water. The natural systems require water to maintain their health. 4 or 5 years of effective drought can actually be a major problem for all of the components of the system.
I've never thought about giving water back to the environment. I've always thought about taking water from the environment.
Well, you're actually a very bad person. The bottom line is that we need to appreciate that natural systems require to be replenished. Water is actually the lifeline for everything, and without it, these systems will collapse. And so we have majestic river redgums running along the river systems throughout Australia, but particularly along the river. They're all struggling now. They've actually hardly had a drink for probably 5 years. And where we're sitting here, which is right at the mouth of the Murray River, there's actually been no natural flows out through the mouth of Australia's longest and biggest river system for the last 5 years.
Why?
Why? Because it's been no water available, because humans have actually taken out for their own consumption, for growing extra crops. It could be wine in South Australia, it could be rice and cotton somewhere else. And we actually failed to actually appreciate that a portion of that water should have been left in the system to maintain its health. If the river collapses, so does the agriculture and everything else, because that system can't then continue to provide the water resources in a good quality way.
So much abstraction upstream means by the time it reaches Adelaide, supplies are running low.
The great dilemma for environments like the Australian environment is what you do in one place can have an effect a long way away. So water being taken out of the River Murray in New South Wales, and we're right down at the mouth in South Australia, more than 1,000 kilometres away, how can they actually interpret that their extraction of water here is having an effect way down there where we are now? It's very hard for people to contemplate. I still fear that the major concern in this country, at least in places like New South Wales, is we want to guarantee and secure water for irrigation and our human use before we think of the environment. Their environment hasn't been affected because there's still water going past them. The fact is that the next people downstream are taking some of that water and the next down a bit more of that water, and so by the time it gets into South Australia, there's very, very little water left.
Despite this being the worst drought on record, the cities, with the exception of Perth, have been surprisingly slow to wake up to water shortages. Bruce Norman, manager of water systems in the northern suburbs of Adelaide, says people have only recently started to worry.
the general public have just really been oblivious to the issues for so long. We've just taken for granted that the water, you turn on the tap and there's water. And it is the big problem. Australians in general have just taken it for granted that the water will always be there. And I think it's really only quite recently, it's just the last 6 months really, that people have really started to sit up and think, well, hang on, we better start doing something.
Do people waste water in Adelaide? Is it wasted in homes? Do people not think about what they're using? Splash it around too much?
Yes, I have three teenage daughters who would be very typical of just standing in a shower for 10, 15 minutes.
Do you stand outside the bathroom door and say, that's enough?
Yes, I do.
Do they pay any attention?
No, they don't. No, and that is a problem. We really don't have best practice water consumption here. Adelaide's shocking. The amount of water we use per head of population is quite shocking compared to, say, Los Angeles or you know, some of the better cities.
I'm in the middle of Adelaide City on a wonderfully warm, sunny autumn morning next to the River Torrens with Michael Driscoll, who's a blogger, who's made his name by being quite vocal about the water crisis that is hitting South Australia. What about usage in the city of water? Do people take it for granted?
Not anymore. We used to, but people in the city are very aware of water usage. We know that the amount of water that this city uses compared to how much water is used throughout the rest of the state, agriculture-wise, 75% of the water used from the Murray-Darling system in South Australia is used by agriculture. 11% is used for urban use here in the city. When you realise that, you start to say, well, you know where the biggest demand is. A lot of farmers in this state would say otherwise.
Why did you say that farmers might not agree?
People in the city are quite aware that a lot of farmers are now starting to say that they are on the brink, that they are about to effectively suffer where there will be no coming back, they'll have to leave the farms. That being said, people in the city are extremely concerned about having to go to level 4 or level 5 restrictions.
You don't know what those would be?
I can guesstimate. We believe level 4 restrictions will require no usage of sprinklers, and that level 5 on your garden will only be hand watering at certain times of the week and only at certain specific times of the day.
Is there an us and them situation?
The only ones I've really heard of is real criticism coming from the country of the city. And I suppose when you walk through the centre of the city and you see the parklands that are green and they've been watered, that would be quite irksome to farmers who effectively are living in a dust bowl and are really reliant upon the Murray River for their livelihood and survival. And yeah, I can imagine how angry and upset that they would be.
Why not do away with your garden? Why not just slab over your lawn?
It's your garden. It's a lifestyle choice. It's adds beauty to where you live. It keeps your neighbourhood cooler, temperature-wise. It's nice to have.
Knowing that the water situation is in crisis, it is desperate, and it's getting worse. Mm. Are people here pointing the finger?
I would say yes. People are starting to get very worried and concerned. If you don't do something soon, then we will start to run out of water in the city. There is a large amount of resentment. One major concern that people have is there is so much water consumption for crops like cotton and rice, and people in the city just cannot understand why that is being grown here in Australia, why they are diverting so much water for that.
Because it helps the economy.
Only to a certain extent. And at what point do you have to say, well, okay, we're using all this water for the crops, but the whole city is shut down, and all the country towns and farms that are downriver from there are starting to have to shut down? At what point do you say enough's enough? We can't understand why you have that sort of an industry or agricultural industry in Australia with our environment where we have so little water to use in the first place. A lot of people here believe that there were too many licenses handed out to the farmers, and that we'll have to buy those licenses back at a fair price.
David Altman, chief executive of the rural town of Murray Bridge, says it's more than just farmers versus city dwellers, though. Whole communities are threatened by the water shortages.
There's a lot of people hurting out there, but the people that are hurting don't say much either. Nationally, there's rising cases of suicide and depression, and a lot of people don't talk about their problems when they're going through these hard times.
And this all stems from the worry over water supplies from the Murray.
Yes, the commercial horticulturalists are having their water allocations heavily cut. So if they're operating under 60% limitation on what they can use, in effect that means that they're cutting their business activity. If we lose a significant amount of our water, it'll have a large impact on our community. We need to have a vibrant farming and agricultural sector. That's what our community is all about. That's why we're here. Murray Bridge is a large regional centre, is here because it's on the banks of the River Murray. That's where we draw our water supply from. If we lose our water allocations, it'll have an enormous impact, and it will to all of the other river towns along the River Murray.
Do you feel that people who live in urban areas understand your situation?
I think people living in the metropolitan area, Adelaide in our case, have a general understanding of the issues of the drought and the impact on the rural community, but they don't live and breathe it, and I don't think they have a full grassroots understanding of what's going on. They read about it in the paper, but in the rural community it hurts. If it doesn't rain, the farmers can't grow their crops, their wheat and their barley, whether it be the dairies, the carrots, the onions, the milk, the grains, the canolas, potatoes. We're in a major food growing area for our state and our nation's produce. And if you're going to water your garden once a week in Adelaide, what real impact is that having?
It does seem to be a government thought in the back of their head, from what I can see, that people would be better in the cities. And so the water has actually been taken to some degree to service a lot of the cities. And of course now the farmers are left with the issue that, the wastage has become a major point of conjecture.
Ian Zadow, you're the chairman of the South Australian Murray Irrigators.
That's right.
How many irrigators do you represent?
We represent between 12 and 1,300 irrigators.
How are they doing, considering the fact that the Murray is in crisis?
Most people are going to get a crop this year. But unfortunately, the downside is when we start our new water on the 1st of July, the outlook is very, very grim, because by all accounts, and if the weather stays as dry as it has been, we may have no water left in our storage dams, which obviously means no water for anyone. And so they have a real issue. When I say they, the authorities have a real issue in determining how they're going to distribute that water. And, well, obviously they're going to need the water initially for people to drink. And 95% of the state's population depend on the River Murray to drink. So it means that the emphasis will be on making sure there's enough water to drink.
Lives are more important than livelihoods.
Well, that's exactly how it is.
The majority of the water from this river goes to agriculture, doesn't it?
It does. Yes, it does. The Murray-Darling Basin area actually supplies nearly half of the country's food. So it's a very dire prospect, because we don't want to depend on imports, because we have such a high quality of food that we produce in Australia, and certainly one of the most efficient users of water in the world.
It damaged the image of farming along these banks, though, as well, hasn't it?
It has.
That use of the water.
Yes,
people are quite resentful and quite angry now that water is in danger of running out.
Well, it is. And you just think to yourself, how are they going to address a problem like, say, Adelaide with a million people to supply water if there's none in the river? It's just, it's a huge problem.
You're listening to Costing the Earth on BBC Radio 4. We're in Australia at the end of another long, hot summer without enough rain to free the country from crippling drought. Nearly a century ago, the government gave farmers the legal right to take water from the River Murray. Their descendants are now nervously waiting to hear whether they'll be allowed to take any water at all in the coming year, knowing that decision will put them out of business. About 6 miles outside of Murray Bridge is Maipalonga. This is a settlement which lies in the Murray-Darling Basin. And this is where farmers like Graham Wynne are planting citrus fruit,
wine grapes and apricots.
How long has your family been here?
My grandfather started farming here originally, then my father took over from that, and now myself and two brothers currently run the property.
Did your family have to buy that water initially?
that was a long time before I was here, but my understanding was, no, that it was part of the land package, the soldiers' settlement done after the First World War when soldiers came home. It has changed over time, and in this area we can now grow vines a lot more effectively on less water, so you can either then sell part of that allocation or lease it to another irrigator.
But you own it, you own that water.
Yes, we own it, however, it is still at the minister's discretion as to whether we can use all of that water, or it is possible that they could take all of that water away.
Do you have to pay anything for it now?
No, only the delivery costs, basically. There is no ongoing charge for that water apart from supplying it to your property.
Farmers do admit to having wasted vast amounts of water in the past through poor irrigation practices, but it's only now, with a population boom and signs of global warming, that the situation has become critical. Half a mile from the Murray River is the settlement of Wall Flat. Les Martin is a dairy farmer here. In the centre of your field, you have an irrigator that stretches right into the distance. How much water comes out of this onto your fields?
Approximately 2,000 litres per minute. It irrigates 72 acres, and it will circle in anything between 8 hours and 24 hours.
Obviously it's essential if you're going to graze your dairy cows out here.
Yes, we rely on growing grass to produce milk. And under drought conditions, of course, we're struggling.
Long term, will you be able to survive?
At the moment, this year, we carry through to June on the allocation we have, and that's reasonable. But next year, they're going to allocate somewhere between 0 and 50%, they believe. That becomes very, very hard for us to operate.
Quite a drop.
Yes, yeah, especially at zero. It was made very clear to us the city comes first as far as the water in this river at the moment. Adelaide receives a very high level of water pumping from here. They will get first option.
We've walked down to the banks of the Murray and the water, you can see, is very depleted here, Les. How long has it been like this?
Since January, it's dropped around about 2 feet, the river, at its normal, what they call, pool level. And now we have to irrigate using a pump to push it onto our river flats.
There's been a lot of criticism, hasn't there?
Definitely.
Of farmers like you because of wastage.
Yes.
And people don't feel any sympathy towards your predicament now. They feel that in many ways you've brought it on yourself and on other people who rely on water from the Murray-Darling Basin.
Yes, but we grow the food. The Murray-Darling Basin produces a huge amount of food for this country. We all realised farmers knew themselves and have improved rapidly over the last 10 years. And we now are quite efficient. We've changed our systems and we don't feel we waste water anymore.
These farmers say they are now water wise. But what about further upriver in New South Wales? The big question for many Australians is why are farmers continuing to grow cotton and rice in a drought ridden country? Doug Meal is Chief Executive of the New South Wales Irrigators Council. How did it come about that farmers started growing crops like cotton and rice in this very dry environment?
Well, you've got to go back probably 40 or 50 years, and a lot of the early decisions were based on governments of the day wanting the country to continue to develop. We grew up on the sheep's back, so to speak, and it was really an agricultural, agrarian economy in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and even well into the 60s. And they were very, very encouraging of industry to basically get out there, use those resources, create regional wealth and employment, and develop the country.
40, 50 years ago, there seemed to be plenty of water in the Murray-Darling, and now there isn't, and yet irrigators continue to push to grow rice and cotton. Can they do that now?
Well, we would say yes. When you look at the systems that are in place, we have what's called a Murray-Darling Basin Cap and water sharing plans. Both of those policy instruments have been put in place to put a ceiling on what water can be used. It doesn't put a ceiling on what production you can do, but what it does force the industry to do is be more productive with the resource they've got.
But people are really pointing the finger at the irrigators now. They're blaming them for the situation this country finds itself in. And they're saying it's lives ahead of livelihoods.
True, but there is a romantic notion in Australia in a lot of the commentary that goes around that if we banned cotton or rice, that all of a sudden our rivers would be full of this pristine environmental water, cities would have all the water they want, but the ingredient that's missing is that the irrigators will then still own the water, and if they can't grow cotton or rice, they'll grow a less efficient crop. It may be soybeans or corn. So the water is still in the hands of the irrigator. It doesn't just end up going down the river. So we've got to move past the idea that it is a blame game. First of all, the reason Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane are out of water has got nothing to do with the irrigators. It's all to do with the worst drought in living memory.
And that, says David Payton of the University of Adelaide, is exactly where Australia has gone wrong. Manipulating the environment to produce non-native crops rather than learning from the original inhabitants.
One of the lessons that I think people that came to this country failed to do, particularly Europeans, is they came to Australia, they brought with them their European agricultural systems, and they simply tried to force that agricultural system onto this landscape. Very poor quality soils, low nutrients, so we have to throw lots of fertiliser on to get good productivity. Variable rainfall, so we have droughts and failures as a consequence of that, which was not what they were used to. And what we failed to do was, one, read that landscape, and we failed to read the culture of the original inhabitants, the Aboriginals, who had been living here for thousands of years in a sustainable way. We tend to want to try and manipulate and control the environment we live in, not work with it. And I think that's the lesson that the Aboriginal communities have. They've been sustainable for long periods of time because they've been able to read that landscape and realise it's not as productive as we've made it be with irrigation.
My name is Matthew Rigney. I'm a Ramanjuri Ngarrindjeri man from the Koorungs and the Lake Districts in South Australia.
In terms of how the Aborigine peoples managed the landscape before other people came, mm-hmm. you managed it in a sustainable way. Mm-hmm. In what sort of ways did you do that?
We farmed. We didn't farm by ploughing up the paddocks, putting in rice crops or cereal crops. This thing about walkabout is a sentence that is used in a derogatory manner for Indigenous people here in Australia. We moved camps. We'd say, sit here where we are now, and we'd utilise the resources, our bush tucker, our bush medicines, our native animals, our fish species, and when they started to get a bit low, we would pack up and we'd move somewhere else, and we'd do a whole cycle, and it could take 18 to 20 or more years. But when we do come back, it's all replenished itself. That's how we farmed our country. That's how we cared for our country. And I get a little bit disturbed and annoyed, I guess, when we talk about, we know the irrigators require water to sustain their livelihoods, but they have been the greatest abusers of our waterways, the irrigators. And, of course, Mother Earth is saying, I've had enough. You people have been totally abusing me. I'm going to stop serving you. And that's what seems to be happening. That's the spiritual thing we believe is happening. And as Ngarrindjeri people, we're saying Mother Earth is punishing us for how we abused her.
If nothing is done quickly enough to help restore water levels in the Murray, what will it mean to your people?
If nothing is done about the water, then we're all going to suffer, all of us, in this country. The river is extremely and vitally important to us because it's our lifeblood. We talk about the river as we talk about our body. It's all the arteries and the veins that is in our body. And what seems to have been happening is they have been trying to manage that through constructing weirs and dams and the like. And what you are doing is actually blocking off the flow of blood through your body. And that's what's happening here. And we're getting the impact of that lack of flow. And the water is becoming sick. And our whole system, my body is becoming sick because of it.
As we've been talking, children have been running up and down the banks of the Murray here and playing in the water.
Yeah.
People get a lot of enjoyment out of it, don't they?
Yeah. Water calms and soothes you. You don't have to go in it. You can sit alongside of it. There's that connection that you feel inside. You feel free.
The big irrigators aren't going to give up their water without a fight. But ultimately, they may not have a choice. Nature may decide the future of the Murray Darling. Doug Meal.
Compulsory buybacks we will vigorously oppose, but not necessarily the objectives of what the government's looking at. Like, it's a case of you're creating a social engineering concept, because for compulsory acquisition, the government's got to make a decision that some part of a community is not going to be irrigated any longer, or they don't deserve to have their water asset. Now, we think that's dangerous.
But people in the country also want it. People who vote are saying, that why should individuals own water when we're going without?
Yeah, I don't know whether people in the country want compulsory acquisition. They want the government out there to fix the problem. There's no question about that. And I think that's what people want. Less of the blame game, more of the action.
It's a big thing, isn't it, to say, here you are, this water is yours. You can hand it down father to son to grandson to great-grandson. It goes on and on and on. That's not fair. That's not a fair go. That's not the Australian way, people are saying.
Well, but when you look at it, our whole country's developed like that. I mean, the land we're standing on now, all of the houses around here were probably given to people when the first settlers came for next to nothing. So we go right back to the very basis of just about everything we've all got has probably come through the same way. So you know, we've just got to, I think, move past that and say less about who owns the resource or the license, more about how do we use that resource to make sure that the country is getting the best possible benefit. Our water efficiencies, the way production and environment come together, the way urban and rural come together, they're the challenges to make sure that the country as a whole gets the best out of its resources.
There are dire predictions about the future of the Murray. If the drought continues, can it survive? What would happen, not just to the irrigators and the farmers, but the communities as a whole along the Murray-Darling Basin, if the situation gets drastically worse, as some people are predicting it will?
Well, right now, we're right on that cusp of a real disaster for primary producers in the irrigated areas of the Murray-Darling Basin and the regional communities. Obviously, if it keeps getting bad, then the environment's going to suffer as well, because you know, they will get first call on the water, the legislation says so. But if there's none to give to anybody, then the environment is going to get a lot worse as well.
You're on a knife edge here.
Absolutely, without question. You know, it's everybody's worst dreams come true. Well, it's not a dream, their worst nightmare. And I think a lot of people around the world, if they were smart, would be looking at Australia and saying, well, we've got to make sure that doesn't happen to us. That must be our early warning sign. What do we do to learn the lessons that they are experiencing right now?
Costing the Earth was presented by Miriam O'Reilly and produced by Maggie Eyre. Next week, biofuels are being hailed as the green alternative to fossil fuels. Tom Heap will investigate whether they may actually do more harm than good at the same time, at 9 o'clock.